Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. So here we are traversing the towpaths of Wolverhampton once again, and this is the fourth episode of our series of Who Am I? And Pete's going to be tackling the question of who am I today, is as understood as a Zen koan.
The basic idea in this podcast is that we can understand who am I, the question who am I, as a Zen koan. Now, a Zen koan is a device used in one of the Zen schools that's used to confound the rational mind so that the innate wisdom, compassion, Buddha nature of the individual is allowed to express itself and to become visible. And this occurs in a moment of Kensho or Satori, in which the Buddha nature bursts through.
Yeah.
Because the rational mind has been confounded. Now, the koan actually is it's a riddle to which there is absolutely no rational answer. And the student's given the riddle by the master, by the Zen master, to go away and tattle on the meditation cushion while he's hoeing the garden. I say he, of course it could be she also. I mean, the Zen nuns as well as Zen monks, of course.
Yeah.
So that's the basic idea, and it comes from Rinzai's Japanese transliteration of Lin Chi or Lin Ji, who is the founder of one of the two main schools of Zen in China.
Yeah.
Of course, it went to Japan, and the Japanese.
Yeah.
The Japanese can't say Lin Chi, they say Rinzai. So Rinzai Zen is that school. And it's contrasted with the Northern School, I think. Forgive me any of you pundits out there if I got this the wrong way around. As I get older, my grasp of detail becomes kind of rather more ragged. But I think the Northern School, and it says that enlightenment is sudden. Southern School says that enlightenment is gradual. Southern School tends to emphasise sitting, and in Japan this moved into, it became Soto Zen. The main guy, of course, is Dogen or Dogen, who just fetishized sitting. So yeah. He says, when you sit, you're Buddha. So you sit until the Buddha becomes ingrained and you become Buddha. But it's a gradual increment, just brought about by loads and loads and loads of sitting. Rinzai tends to say enlightenment's sudden. It can happen while you're walking along. And it's brought about by the koan. And so it's founded by Lin Chi, who was active in China in the Tang Dynasty. And, just to get an idea of periods, Lin Chi died in 866, probably. It's actually kind of contemporary with Shankaracharya. Shankara, who we spoke about the other day, yesterday. Now, koans, famous koans, are such puzzles as, what is a mouse when it spins? You know, or the master say, what is your true face? Show me your true face before you were born. And what is the sound of one hand clapping is the famous one.
Yeah.
But who am I? Actually, can be seen as falling into this category of unsolvable conundrums. Now, you might imagine that you can actually solve the who am I conundrum by performing a semantic ascent, as in Platonism and as in Advaita, on certain articulations of it, that you can do this netty netty thing, you know. You say, well, I'm not that, and I'm not that, and I'm not that. I'm not the body. I'm not memory. I'm not the mind. I'm not the sum of my experiences and my past, etc. You know, you can have that kind of netty netty, that sloughing off, because anything that can, the logic here is that anything that can become the object of consciousness is not the self. The self is the bearer of consciousness, and the objects in the field of consciousness, the things we see, the things we feel, the things we imagine, are not the self, because they are the objects over and against the subject,
yeah,
of the self. But that falls into an infinite regress, because the self can see the self. So what is it that's seeing the self? Well, it's another self. You know, so we'll take another step further back, and we can see the self seeing the self, and you can always regress, and the thought there, the fact that one falls into infinite regress, we can look at that in a couple of ways. Either that just blows your mind, because you're falling through this kind of hall of reflecting mirrors, yeah, this tunnel of into infinity, that can blow your mind. Fair enough, good. But at the same time, it can make you think, well, the subject is in it intrinsically ungraspable. Because whatever we make an object, make into an object so we can scrutinise it, is automatically not the self. So we can never see the self. The self can't see the self. Even though at the same time, you could almost say it was a definition of consciousness, that it's self-consciousness. Self-consciousness, look at that.
Oh wow, a massive heron just flew right by us. Wow.
God, they're like something prehistoric though, isn't it?
Yeah, like a pterodactyl, yeah, just flew past.
Anyway, the upshot here is that consciousness has this kind of ungraspable quality, even though consciousness is necessarily self-consciousness. Human consciousness is certainly. I mean, it's not enough to be conscious in the sense that we can respond to stimuli, because on that take, a thermostat is conscious. There is some other quality, there is something else going on, and it is that consciousness, I'm conscious now because I know I'm conscious. There is that kind of reflexivity possible within consciousness, but not a scrutiny of the subject. You know, the subject can't kind of be scrutinised by turning it into an object that we can look at.
Yeah.
We always end up in this infinite regress, or this state of attempting to grasp something that cannot be grasped. And so, on that take, you could say that using reason in that fashion, it looks as though it's doomed. And that must be the insight, I think, behind Rinzai or Lin Chi instituting the koan, and the notion of the sudden enlightenment in which reason is confounded. And that, of course, gives rise to the desire to confound reason, because there's a sense of its limit there. Now, I've said elsewhere, you know, that we know that reason has a limit, but we can't actually discern it. Because if we're going to appraise reason rationally, and we'd want to appraise it rationally, presumably, we'd have to stand outside of it to appraise it. But in standing outside of it, we wouldn't be scrutinising it, because we'd apply some part of reason outside of the sphere of reason. So we wouldn't be scrutinising the totality of reason. So there's a sense you can't find the limit. Similarly, you can't find the limit of language.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Because the minute you stand outside any limit, it is no longer a limit. But the act of scrutiny that you're wanting to make entails standing outside a limit. So this notion that which we hear in spiritual circles about the limits of reason. Well, we know there are some, because we fuck up using it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we can't live without it, but it's not a fucking perfect instrument. We know there's a limit, but we are actually intrinsically incapable of discerning that limit. Now, some of the Zenists, you know, they get carried away and say, you know, this is the limit to reason, and there is, and because there's a limit to reason, we've got no use for it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Zenists are always taking the piss out of professors and stuff, and fair enough, you know, it can get pretty absurd. Even though some Zen masters have also been phenomenal scholars, as it happens, but that's another matter. So, I wanted to say, you know, with Zen, be careful about that tendency to decry reason by Zenists. But at the same time, realise that in the you am I, that maybe Zen has hit upon something there. That well, okay, how are we going to get out the impasse of infinite regress? Because you can keep saying, who am I? Well, I'm not that, so I must be this. But hang on, if I can scrutinise this, that's not me. I'm the thing that's seeing this rather than the this that I'm seeing, etc.
Yeah.
In thinking that we, you know, Zen's right then, thinking that we need to explode through that, as it were. So I think the mind blowing, that falling into the infinite regress, blowing your mind, is probably a good thing, and that is actually like a Kensho or a Satori, because in that explosion, a lot of limits on consciousness are blown away. You know, and you do get a kind of a clear seeing, and certainly a feeling of lightness, well-being, humour, etc. So, summarising slightly there, the who am I question can, I think, fruitfully be treated as a Zen koan. It's probably only going to work as a koan if you try some of the rational inquiries into this hard problem of identity and this hard problem of consciousness by, you know, having a little look at the psychoanalytic idea that you are somehow the sum of your experiences, the sum that you're constituted out of your past. On the one hand, you can explore the limits of that, and as I think we did the other day, because we found an instance where we couldn't get any purchase on what we were actually experiencing by going down the psychoanalytic route. We couldn't get to grips with that immediacy of being, you know. So we found a problem with that, and it's probably good to experientially find that problem, to find the psychoanalytic project ultimately unsatisfying as far as this question, who am I, is concerned. Similarly with the Advaita, with the attempt to make a semantic ascent. We kind of hit a limit. We hit a limit of infinite regress and so forth. And as you might then be ready to say to yourself, well, I'm going to sit with the impossibility of this. I'm going to be with the impossibility of answering this question until it damn well melts my brain. In the hope, and it is a hope, because you don't know until it happens, that I might explode through into some kind of Satori. But that explosion, it is a kind of confounding of that of the questing, you know, the intellectual questing or the existential questing even. It becomes confounded by its impossibility. And out of that, I would say again, what recommends this to me is that one explodes into the realm of the normal.
Yeah.
You know. Somebody said, "What's it like? What's Sartori like?" Some Zen master said, "It's exactly like ordinary experience, except 2 inches off the ground." You know, and there's this immense respect for the aesthetic of the ordinary in Zen, which really comes out of the way they've tackled the question, the who am I question. Because ultimately all these koans, they are kind of the who am I question, slightly disguised.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, what is emerged when it spins is actually who am I? who is it that could potentially answer this conundrum? Or who is it that's finding this conundrum impossible to answer? What is it that's ungraspable here? Well, what is ungraspable is consciousness itself. And even though consciousness is only truly consciousness when it's self-consciousness, when the consciousness knows that it's conscious, that, I mean, it's out of this scenario that of ungraspability that the explosion is possible. So I'm a bit of a fan of that approach, but I'm also, I do see a place where we need to guard, and that's the temptation to denigrate reason and to pretend that we know what the limit of reason is. We don't even know what reason is, to be honest with you. You know, reason itself, for thousands of years, East and West, has remained in question. We rely on it all the time, but here's the big question, well, what is reason? And how are we going to come to a rational appraisal of what reason is without knowing what reason is in the first place? Again, we're trying to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. This is where the limits lie, to be honest, you know, in the fact that we either always find ourselves incapable of getting a proper foundation for anything. We can't build edifices because we can't get foundations. We can't build edifices of thought anymore. It's what postmodernism is. Because we just realise that any foundations you put down there are ultimately on the sand. They're on the quicksand. Either that, or you're falling into infinite regress, as when you try and scrutinise the self.
Yeah.
And I think that's got it with. That's as much as I'd probably want to say for a short thing like that. Do you have a question?
This is probably not the place for it here, but I was going to ask if anyone has had a good stab at trying to define reason. But that's a long answer, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So what is it that you want to do in the next episode?
Yeah, I've called it a little bit, again, roughly. Everything about this has been sort of a rough sketch stuff, which I think's cool. Rough is good. I call it just a phenomenological approach, and I thought I would deal with yoga phenomenology.
Yeah.
Which I think is the stuff that Patanjali talks about in his first half a dozen aphorisms, and which I'm no doubt going to talk about endlessly because I find it one of the most juicy seams to mine.
Yeah.
But also, probably try and get in the same episode consideration of the letting be that's involved in that approach, and
yeah,
also perhaps to take a look at how Lao Tzu, just for instance, is also recommending this kind of letting be approach. And I might relate that to three tendencies in Zen, being as we're on it, because I can do that in a few sentences as well. But basically the sphere in which that discourse will revolve is really phenomenology. And phenomenology, just roughly speaking, just means the return to the things themselves. It's
yeah,
working with. It's a working with one's felt lived experience. And people have arrived at that in the West in the 20th century through precisely the problem of foundationalism, in other words, of actually being incapable, however hard we've tried for thousands of years, to erect our intellectual edifices on firm foundations. There aren't any. Everything that people have attempted to claim is a foundation is really open to trenchant criticism. So that's kind of one of the reasons. Also because of how we get into infinite regresses and things like that. So there was just this attempt to say, well, hang on, where is a sphere where we can put all this stuff to one side and start again? It was a bit like, and it, Husserl's phrase was, return to the things themselves. Well, okay, and I think Patanjali actually had a bit of an idea like this. He said, well, let's just be with our felt lived experience and see what that reveals to us, if anything.
Sounds good. So that's what's going to be in the next episode then.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it'll be a nice sunny day again, like it is today.
Yeah, we should do that tomorrow.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Over and out, readers. Well, you're not readers, are you? You're listeners. Over and out, listeners.